Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
It is great to be with you. If you're a guest with us today, I'd especially like to welcome you. I hope that you find Crossbridge as a welcoming place. I hope you feel as though when you leave today, you've been encouraged, you feel loved, and wherever you are in your faith, because we have people all over the place at Crossbridge, but wherever you are today and wherever you find yourself, you would see yourself taking one step forward in your faith towards Jesus. So we especially want to welcome those who are our guests with us and those who are online. And last week, Pastor Will was preaching, and I reminded him this week, hey, we have a lot of new people here. And the lot of new people that are going to be in service, they're all in sixth grade. And so I know some of them are serving today. Some of you are here. If you're in sixth grade, just throw your hand up for me real quick. You're going into sixth. You're here. Okay, a couple of you. I want to tell you I'm happy you're here. I want to tell you that when it comes to Sunday mornings, you kind of graduated up and you're like, oh man, I got to deal with Jimmy every week now. I'm sorry. Just be happy you're not my daughter. She's going to be in here with us. She's serving right now and she's like, Dad, I got to listen to you every week. I'm like, yep. She's like, thought I had an hour away from you, you know. So I'm like, sorry, Kay. But here's the deal with you guys. I want you to know that I'm excited you're here. I want you to know that if you're in sixth grade now and you're coming up here, in kind of using Pastor Will's imagery last week of the two tables, I don't want you to feel like you're at the kiddie table when you're here. Okay? I don't want you to feel like that. For those of you who are in that element or middle school range now, I want you to know that when I prep and when we prep as a preaching team for our Sunday mornings, we have you in mind. That we want to make sure you know that you can walk away with something every Sunday morning. And I know it's going to be a little different over there. It's not as techno-y, which Will can work on. But I want you to know that we absolutely care that you're here. We recognize you're here. And from my perspective, since you're going to have to listen to me most of the time, I'm going to do everything I can to speak to you like an adult. I'm going to expect and kind of call you up to the big guy table, big girl table, and say, here we go. Let's do this together. And I am going to work so hard to make sure that each of these messages that you hear from now on when you're at church apply to you. And all I'm going to ask is that you stick with me. Okay, so I'm going to work hard to make it work for you. You work hard to stick with me. Do we have a deal? Okay, awesome. You know, this week, as I was preparing for this series, you know, we're in a series called Words to the Wise right now. And in this series, we've been talking about Proverbs. And what is it about Proverbs that's amazing and going after wisdom? And how do we get wisdom? I picked up my daughter on Wednesday. She was out helping, being a mommy's helper for a couple days with my mom. And when she finished the weekend, she jumped into the car. And, you know, as she was getting into the car, my mom just hands her this, like, wad of cash. And she's like, thanks for the help. And I was like, I never got that for helping my mom. But she did. So we're in the car, and we start driving. And as we're driving, she's reading her book in the back. I'm thinking about this morning and trying to wonder, when I was in sixth grade, what would be some of the things that would have changed my life? Like, what, as I'm preparing for this moment with you here, what is it that I could share with you as a student that you would say, this would change my life? And I thought, what would change my life? What is it that I wish I knew? And the list was long. I wish I knew a lot of stuff in sixth grade that I'm learning now. I don't know it yet. But then it dawned on me when she's in the back and she's like, I'm like, I think she has more money in her hand than I have. Oh my gosh, money. I wish when I was in sixth grade, I knew what to do with money. I wish I knew how to handle it, and I had some sort of wisdom, because I got my first job when I was 11, and I was doing this archaic thing called filing, okay? And filing is where you would take this paper, and I'm explaining this to those who are younger, and there would be a highlighted name on this piece of paper. I would then have to take that paper to another paper file with that same name and put it in there. And then I'd go back, and 1,000 sheets later, my dad would hand me $20 for multiple hours worth of work. And I'm like, man, he really made out on that deal. And so I have this $20, and I was like, $20 back in the early 90s, late 80s is a decent amount of money. And I'm like, oh, I can buy baseball cards. Not that they're worth anything. It's not even an investment now, but I could buy baseball cards. and comic books and candy and snacks and comic books and snacks and candy. And there was no limit to what I could buy. If I really wanted to be focused, I could save up for a new Nintendo game. Zelda was worth saving up for. I could save up for a new pair of Patrick Ewings, which I was going to outgrow in 3 months. But I did it. I would spend it and spend it and spend it. And it dawned on me with my daughter in the back of the car, I hope she knows what to do with this. This is my responsibility to teach her, because I stopped and I thought about a majority of the adults that I know, a majority of the adults that I meet with on a regular basis. And when the topic of finances comes up, it's as though everything gets weird and uncomfortable. And it's like, we're not going to talk about that, are we? We don't have to talk about that, do we? And I think most of us don't want to talk about it because we, as a culture, lack wisdom in how to use our money well. We don't know what to do. And so here's my promise to you. If you are young in this room now and you don't have a full-time job yet, or you're trying to figure out, like, I'm just getting through school, at some point you're going to accumulate some money. And today what I'm going to do is I'm going to tell you how you can make money, how you can make a decent amount of money. I'm telling you, if you follow this principle, you will make good money. Does that sound like a deal? Yeah, please, there's adults in the room who are like, yeah, teach me. I want that. I'm going to tell you today how to make good money. And it's not a prosperity gospel, name it, claim it, you get it kind of thing. I'm going to tell you how to make good money. Then we're going to walk through Proverbs, and we're going to look at not only how to make good money, but what to do with that money. And if you have not started to accumulate money yet, you take these principles, you put them into practice, I promise you, you will have a fraction of the problems that many of the adults who are sitting around you have right now. This will not be one of the top two arguments in your relationships when you get older. As in a marriage, that's the number one argument is money. You can avoid this. So I'm going to tell you how to do it now. What you choose to do with it is up to you. Does that sound good? Okay, you can talk back to me. I know it's a beautiful weekend. You're ready to go, but this is where we're going to go today. You ready? Okay, awesome. Here's the issue. Some of you, you're kind of checking Crossbridge out, and you're thinking, oh, man, this is the week I check out church. They're going to talk about money on my week. Some of you, life has been crazy. You're a regular at Crossbridge, and getting back to church is hard because of, sports and work, and you're like, this is my week? Listen. At Crossbridge, we have a couple things that are super important to us. We are a very transparent church. So when a topic comes up in Scripture, we talk about it. There's no shame to it. There's no worry to it. There's no guilt involved in this morning. My goal is not to make you feel as though you have to give tons of money to Crossbridge. Here's why. Many of you, if you have given to Crossbridge, thank you for that. You've gotten a letter probably this week, or it's going to come early next week, that tells you and gives you a very clear update of where we are as a church. We hide nothing because we don't feel like we should or have to. As a church, outside of one major gift, which I'm going to tell you about a little later, we have spent about $8,000 underneath our targeted giving or spending. We knew we had a target. We're about $8,000 under that outside of one gift, which puts us a little bit over. On the flip side of that, we have a target, and we set a budget for what we believe God's going to continue to provide at Crossbridge, and we're about $5,000 underneath that. So we're not in this dire position where I'm standing up here saying, oh, please give, please give, please give. Please. That is not what today's about. So if you're like, he's going to guilt me, I am not. That is not my goal. If you're here and you're a guest with us as well, I'm giving you the opportunity, sit back. Just sit back. You can put your feet up on the bench pew in front of you and relax. Just relax and listen in, because this is a family conversation. And I truly believe that you can take these principles that we're going to talk about, apply them to your life, and it will change your life wherever you go. I promise you that. And like I said, when things come up in Scripture, we are unashamedly biblical here. And when we're going through Proverbs, you cannot go through Proverbs and not talk about money. It's impossible. When you go from chapters 9 to chapters 22, when it gets real practical in Proverbs, there's these two-line sayings. There are two topics that come up more than anything else. One of them is Money. Money comes up over and over. Why would that come up over and over? Because the wisest man in the world, King Solomon, who's writing up to chapter 22, he's writing to his kids. He knows that his kids are going to have issues with money. This is a problem in many people's lives. So he's trying to, you know, kind of hedge it a little bit and be like, let me help you understand. And the second thing that he talks about, any idea or guesses? Wisdom. Talks about wisdom. The second most important thing, the topic he brings up, how we use our words. How we use our words. So we'll save that for another week because I don't want to bombard everybody back to back. So here's what we're going to do this morning. If you would open up in your Bibles to the book of Proverbs. If you don't have a Bible with you, we'd be happy to give you one. Or if you're on your phone or tablet, feel free to jump there. The easiest way to find it, take your Bible, open it right to the center. You should be in Psalms, and it's one book to the right. And we're going to jump into chapter 6 this morning. And so I told you before that I'm going to give you this principle on how to make money. When it comes to Proverbs, Proverbs is a very general book. It's not a specific book. So when I say we're going to talk about money, if you're sitting here wondering like, boy, where should I invest my money? You can't go to Proverbs and like 20 years ago, if I'm sitting here thinking, what should I do with the money I earned from caddying today? Which stocks should I invest in? And it's like, thou shalt invest in Amazon and thou will be very happy, right? That's not going to happen in Proverbs, okay? You won't find the specifics. If you wrestle with your children, you're thinking, how long is an appropriate punishment when my kid talks back to me? Thou shalt punish your child forever and never let them leave their room. You know, you're not going to find this. What you're going to find is, yes, investing is a good thing to do. Disciplining your children is essential while you still have the time to do it because that time goes, right? So there are general principles that we're going to apply to our life, and there is a general principle for us to make good money. A general principle, and so we're jumping into Proverbs chapter 6. It says this right off the bat. Take a lesson from the ants. This is Solomon's great wisdom on how to make good money. Take a lesson from the ants. It's King Solomon's like our first zoologist. He's the guy who, if you ever looked through Proverbs, he's always picking up lessons from the animals all the time. This is the lesson he picks up. It says this, take a lesson from the ants, you lazy bones. Learn from their ways and become wise. Though they have no prince or governor or ruler to make them work, they labor hard all summer gathering food for the winter. But you, lazy bones, you notice he's talking to his kids. Anybody else ever call their kids lazy? Yeah, like two of us are admitting it. Yeah, you have. But you, lazy bones, how long will you sleep? Teens, when will you wake up? A little extra sleep, a little more slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest. Then poverty will pounce on you like a bandit. Scarcity will attack you like an armed robber. Can you pick up Solomon's key for making good money here? The general wisdom that sums this up is found in verse 8. What does it tell us that the ants do? They labor hard. You want to make good money? Work hard. Work hard. You will not make good money if you are lazy, you sit on your butt, and you decide that Netflix is your best friend for the summer. Guess what? I guarantee you Netflix isn't going to pay you. It's not. That would be awesome. But that's not reality. Take a lesson from the ants who work crazy hard all the time. Not because someone's forcing them to do it, but that's what they're wired to do. You and I are wired to work hard. And you don't even have to have a job to work hard. Right? Life is built with things that come our way that we have to work at. And we're called to work hard. The secret to making good money. Work hard. And I know if you're like, oh, that's the secret? I don't like that secret. That's not a good secret. You're right. But it's wisdom. Wisdom tells us that laziness is going to make it and get us to a point where the robber comes at us before we ever know what's coming, and poverty will seize us. Poverty will put us in a place where we can't give, we can't share. All we're trying to do is survive, and we can't even do that. Why? Because we didn't work hard. We have to work hard. And when, did you ever notice that people who work hard, money seems to find them? It goes their way. We have to work hard if we are going to make money. If you were lazy, it's not going to come your way. This is when it comes on you like a robber. No, thank you. That is not what I want. I found myself saying the same thing to my kids. And I remember my dad saying it to me, and I'm sure that his dad said it to him. Work hard. Don't be lazy. Keep going. Keep going. I would point out in a store to my dad, I'd like that. I want this. And he would say to me, do you think that money just grows on trees? I don't know, but if it's paper, it comes from trees, so we should figure this out. I'm like, Dad, if we plant 100, we can be in great shape. Life doesn't work that way, does it? Life doesn't lead us in a place where a $100 bill is magically going to appear in your wallet or purse. It doesn't happen that way. How does a $100 bill get into your wallet or purse? You work for it. You work hard, and someone says, thank you for your work. Here is your pay. This is biblical. It's not that hard. It's simple. Work hard and money comes your way. But we have to balance this with Proverbs 23:4, where Solomon also says, don't wear yourself out trying to get rich. Don't wear yourself out trying to get rich. Be wise enough to know when to quit. Right? You could work hard, and we all know people who work so hard to accumulate so much, but they have no life. Their families have been abandoned. They put in 80, 90, sometimes 100 hours a week for the sake of, but they've lost all. We have to be very, very careful. When we work our tails off, because this is what God has called us to do. This is a wise move, but we also have to know when we need to take a step back and stop and say, this is not ideal. I need to stop working. I need to invest where? In my family, in myself, in leisure. Right? When's the last time you breathed and read the book that you wanted to read and not thought about when can I work? What's this? Because let's be honest, right? None of us are in a place where there's a lack of work to do. Right? There's always another project at home or at work that can be worked on. There's always an email, always a voicemail, always a text to get back to, always a message that you need to respond, always a project that needs to get done. For me, I know when I'm preaching from now until December, there's always a sermon to be written. It doesn't end. It never ends. Work will be there tomorrow, I promise you. And when you work hard. And when you stop, breathe. You need that. Go to the pool and laugh with your kids. They need that. That's what we need. I love the translation where it says at this Proverbs end, don't wear yourself out trying to get rich. Have the wisdom to show restraint. And this word restraint is very interesting to me because in America, we don't understand this word, do we? We don't really restrain from anything. When we want something, we go get it. We've even come to the place in life where restraint is at a place where now we get frustrated if it takes something longer than 2 days to get to our house. Right? Let's be honest. We've all had to order something last minute. And we're like, it's going to get here Thursday, but I need it Wednesday, and I'm ordering it Tuesday. I don't want to pay $4.99 more. You know, like we don't know how to show restraint. We prime ourselves with Prime to expect it now. Right? We want it right now. I mean, look at our government. Not to get political, but as a whole, we really stink at managing money and showing restraint. We do not do this well, and I don't care what political side you come from, no one can look at the budget of the United States and go, oh, I feel good about this. I feel really good about this amount of debt we have currently. This is going to be great for my kids and grandkids. My great-grandkids are going to love not getting anything when they get older. This is awesome. No one's going to say that. We don't show restraint at all. And here's what's weird. We work so hard for our money that we believe we should spend it however we want because we've worked hard for it. But when we work so hard, have you ever wondered, like, where does my money go? What do I do with this? How come it never feels like I have enough? Has anyone ever felt that besides me? I work hard. I work so hard for what I get. Why do I always feel like there's not enough? Where does our money go? It's actually interesting. Well, for America as a whole, we're going to use a little Benjamin to kind of help illustrate this a little bit. With America as a whole, we make some decent money. And so I could use a dollar bill, but in the Northeast, that's not going to help you get anything. So, at least not in New Jersey. When it comes to how we handle our finances, 24%, the largest percent of what we make, goes to housing. This is going to include everything above you, right? All that happens under your house. This is your mortgage, your rent, your lease, whatever it is that you've got going on. This is your insurances, your taxes. This is the toilet paper that you need in your house to survive, right? This is everything that happens under your roof so that you have a place to live. 24%, almost a quarter of what we make. Next, 19% goes to healthcare. This number, some experts are actually putting almost up to 25%. And depending on what happens on a political level, when it comes to the next plans that are coming out or previous plans that some people love and some people hate, it doesn't matter. The collective consensus is this is going up. And so there is so much that happens in this plan when we talk about emergency rooms, doctors, prescriptions, when you need to get braces for your kid and you're like, this is costing me how much? That's going to be 19 on the rise, going up. After that, sorry, Ben, 22% we spend on recreation and personal needs. Recreation and personal needs. This is clothes. This is vacations. This is anything that we do for us. So your vacations, your gadgets, that new shoe, that new purse, this new whatever, this all comes down to us. We spend 22% on personal needs and recreation. It's going quickly, isn't it? A lot of our money. This next one is interesting because I think it's more. The stats say it's at 15%, but the size of America and the plethora of our Instagram pictures tells me that it's more, but food is 15%. We love our food in America. I mean, we take pictures of our food and send it to each other to be like, look how good my food is, right? I want someone to text me, don't do this, but send me a picture of mac and cheese, and you're like, yeah, dinner tonight. Not the, look, I went out everywhere to super fancy. But we spend a lot of money on food. This averages out to 15%, whether you are buying groceries or going out to eat, the average is going to be in this area. And I think it's important to comment that on each of these areas, it's going to fluctuate per family. If you have like a medical, crazy family, something like mine, where every kid has allergies through the roof, and you're like, well, that's going to change. That makes this line and this line go up quite a bit. So everything's going to ebb and flow here a little bit, and your percentage are going to be yours. But we spend 15% that goes right here. Hashtag, there went 15% of my income. I ate my money. We're missing something, though. How did you get here today? You drove. Did anybody walk to church this morning? Andy, he's like, I rode a bike. Andy, it's different for you. Did you ride this morning? Yeah. Thanks for ruining my illustration. Except for Andy. But Andy, I know you have a car to get to work too. Auto takes up 17%. It doesn't matter if you drive a 2006 Mazda Hoopty like myself or a super souped up, I have a great luxury car, it doesn't matter. For our income and purposes, 17% goes to your car, car payments, a lease payment, your gas, and our crazy ridiculous, I can't believe we pay this much insurance on our vehicles. I think we're paying for North Jersey congestion down in South Jersey, but I don't run the insurance company. So what does that leave us? 3%. Leaves us about 2 to 3%. 2 to 3%. That's all we have left. So far, 97% of what we have has been spent on us. And we have an issue now where with what we have, I believe that there are needs in the world that we get to meet, that we should meet. And the problem is there's only a small section left for us to give because we have no more margin. We are spent out. And for some, these percentages aren't even realistic because we're way more than this. We live way beyond our means. We have an income and we're like, that doesn't matter. I have a card that tells me I have more. And we live there, not with what we've worked hard for. And so we have all of these issues, and what's left? Almost nothing for God. Almost nothing for poverty that needs to be met, water that needs to be cleaned, food that needs to be bought for people who can't have it, homeless who need a room tonight. This is all we have left. And this is average America. So in average America, it's about 2%. The reason I picked these percentages is because we're in church. I'm going to assume you want to know something spiritually about that's going on in your life, or you wouldn't be here. And so for those who would call themselves Christians, who pursue a life and teaching of Jesus, we should be a little more here, right? I mean, our whole faith is built on love people, right? Help those in need. You know what our percentage is for an average in church? Not Crossbridge, but across. It's 3%. We up it a whole percent. Take that, the U.S. How sad is that? The very people who should be taking this and saying, God, I have enough, and I want to give you, actually, I just want to give you a little bit, so you could do a lot with that, right? I mean, you're God. This is never going to work for God because it doesn't work for us. We have no margin. We have no margin. We live outside of our means. And so there's three principles that I want to go through very quickly that we're going to find in Proverbs that takes this and changes it, that changes this game. And so we can take the Benjamin and reorient how these percentages look. And the first and one of the most important, we're going to go through three principles at three words apiece. So for those of you, you're like, you're in sixth grade now, you're going to get this and remember it forever. I promise you. You ready? It's going to get super technical in a second. The first principle is, debt is bad. Debt is bad. Okay? I know, it's hard, isn't it? Debt is bad. And what is debt? Debt is buying things with money we don't have. Usually it's buying things we don't need with money we don't have to impress people we don't even like. Right? We buy things just to have them. We buy things just to have them. And our debt is through the roof. For this country alone, we do this mostly on credit cards. We have someone at a bank somewhere who says, here's something plastic, and this tells you that you have extra money now. So go ahead, and when you want to pay us back, don't worry about the interest. You can pay it back over 20 years. It's not that big of a deal. And so we're like, I like that money deal. And we swipe away. Here's what King Solomon says about debt in Proverbs 22:7. The rich rule over the poor, and the borrower is slave to the lender. That last part, the borrower is slave to the lender. That word slave is so important because if you're here this morning and you know debt, debt is that noose that hangs on to us, that limits our every move. It limits everything we do. It constrains where we are, and it dictates how we use all of this. Did you notice that the debt line isn't on here? This constrains us, and we are burdened and now bound by debt. And I want to get as real as I can for the Northeast right now, so it's not some random stat. In the Northeast alone, the average family carries about $8,000 in credit card debt. Some of you are looking at me now like, what? So let me put it in perspective. That means you probably don't have $8,000 in credit card debt. But someone next to you could have 16, could have 24, could have up to 40. I'm not talking about houses. I'm not talking about secured loans now, student loans, anything like that. I'm talking about credit card debt with us buying that bigger TV, that vacation we could have saved for, but instead we just thought, you know what, it's a couple thousand for Disney and we're paying for it till our kids graduate. Here's the issue. We buy things we don't necessarily need to impress people we don't like. Right? We've got an issue with money we don't have, and the average family is sitting in this place. If you are in that place, you know what it's like to be a slave. You know how this holds you and grips you and allows you absolutely no freedom, so that if a need ever comes up, if there's someone who you love that can't survive, you can't help. I can't help. Why? Because all our money is tied up in a lender. We've got nothing. I don't want to make this difficult. I want to make it as easy as possible. You can work hard for great money. That money will come your way. And when it comes your way, always remember, debt is bad. Debt is bad. Not too hard, right? Second principle, real quick. Saving is good. Okay, say it with me. Saving is good. Right? If you're a financial advisor in here right now, you're probably looking at me and thinking, and that's my pastor. Like, that's why I went to Bible school? To tell me debt is bad and saving is good? Yes. Yes, because we don't understand these things. We don't operate like this as a country, and saving is so good. This is common sense. Proverbs 13:11 says, dishonest money dwindles away, but whoever gathers money little by little makes it grow. When we see people come into large sums of money real quick and they're like, I won the lottery. I won big in AC. I won or inherited this amount. How often does that really work out in their favor? Right? Usually they blow through it. Because we're not designed to get lots of money at one time. When we work hard and we put our mind to whatever it is we're doing and all our energy and focus, we work hard, we gain money, we work hard, we gain. It's a slow game when it comes to money. We can get into debt real quick, but getting out takes forever. Right? We have to know how to save little by little by little. And here's the crazy part. You ready for America right now? 50% of America could not handle an emergency in their house that was $500 or more. 50% of America does not have the wiggle room where if a $700 emergency came, they would have enough in their emergency fund to pay it off and be like, we're good. Even worse than that, or a little more difficult, is experts say that we should have about 3 to 6 months worth of our salary combined, if you're married, in the bank in case of a catastrophic emergency. Most of America is nowhere near that. They don't even have a month. What that means is many of us are one layoff, emergency. We are one accident away from financial ruin. This is not God's design for our life. Most of us don't have anything in savings in America because we don't know how to budget. We don't have any way to say, I make X amount of money and this is where it's going to go. We say, my check went in. What do you want to do tonight? There's no definition to where it goes. When we have savings, when we are able to stock away little by little by little by little, big things happen. And this is not, and I'm going to be straight up with you, this is not about your secure future. This is not about you making sure you've got enough just to make it into the grave and then be like, ha ha. This is not about you, and it's not even about your kids. It's about your kids' kids. This is about a generational mindset. Proverbs 13:22, King Solomon tells us that a good person leaves an inheritance for their children's children. When we save a little by little over a long period of time, we aren't thinking about ourselves anymore. We're thinking down the road. We're trying to say down there matters, not right now matters. And when we can get out of the I can have restraint or I have no restraint mode, we can begin to put restraints on our life and hone these percentages to look a little different so that when the future comes, our kids are set up well. That's what this comes down to. It's about generationally stepping in and saying, I can do this. The best part about this step, giving is good, that saving is good, you could do this right now. You could start today. If you're in sixth grade and you're like, what? You work for something, you get some sort of money, you could have gotten $5. Take a buck and put it in the bank. I promise it'll make a difference. You can spend three. You can't really buy anything with $5 anyway. Put some in the bank. Save. It'll make a difference. Because saving is good. Lastly, our final principle is giving is best. Giving is best. And I say this because I believe that this principle right here is one of the most overlooked, by far the most powerful influencer of our finances when it comes to wisdom. And so Proverbs 19:17 says, whoever is kind to the, who? Whoever is kind to the poor lends to the Lord. And God will, and he will do what? He's going to reward them for what he's done. You see, there's something about giving. Whoever is kind and to the poor, whoever is going to give to the poor, it's like lending to God. How could that be like lending to God? Genesis 1:26 says that you've been created in the image of God, and so have I. So each one of us looks like God in some way. And because of that, we have a God who is designed to give. Our God is a giving God, and we know this because he gave his only son, Jesus Christ, to us to pay the penalty, is what we read in Scripture, right? To pay the penalty, which is a term we're talking about now, for the sins that we have, our debt, so that we can experience freedom. God is a giving God, and if you and I are created in his image, we are giving people. Our culture tries to tell us, you're a consumer. No, you're not. You're a giver. That's who you are. You are not designed to consume. You were designed to give. And every one of us knows, even on 2%, when you give, you know that grin you get to know that you've impacted someone's life? And you're like, I don't know, it just, and what's the phrase you use? It just felt right. Why did it feel right? Because there's a piece of you that is meant to give. Giving is great. It's the best. If saving is generational, giving is eternal. This is our eternal principle. And it applies to everybody, not just those who are Christians, but to those who are Christians, who have said, I want to pursue Jesus with everything I've got. I want my life to be centered around him. There's a different principle for us. So if you're here and you're exploring your faith, sit back for a second and be like, whew, I don't want to be a Christian. God calls us to something bigger, to give. He calls us to be generous givers. Proverbs 3:9 says, honor the Lord with your wealth, with the first fruits of your crops. And when he talks about first fruits, the word that he uses throughout Proverbs, and it's used throughout the Old Testament, and then Jesus uses it again in Matthew, is this idea of tithing. And tithing is 10% of what we make. And if you want to stop and be like, well, is it 10% of gross or 10% of net? I don't care. You take that up with God. I just don't care. When most of us are 2 to 3%, have at it. That conversation doesn't matter to me. What does matter is that we a lot of times rob God. And you don't know this, but some of the people who are sitting around you now are some of the most generous people I've ever met in my life. They give so freely of what they work so hard for. And the kingdom of heaven advances because of that. I have no idea what anybody in this church gives, and I ask to keep it that way because it would just be weird for me. But here's what I know. That because of your generosity as a church and what you choose to give collectively, Crossbridge can be a blessing. Can I tell you that this year things have changed? Things have changed where We've been supporting missionaries locally and globally, people on college campuses and people overseas. We're helping church plants get off the ground in South Jersey. Right now, just north of us in Cherry Hill, there are certain families in our church right now who you wrestle with affording groceries. And the beauty is you can come to Crossbridge and be like, I need a little bit of help. You can do that. Will and I got a random call 2 weeks ago from some guy who says, I heard your church helps people. I'm stuck in Swedesboro. Can I have a ride? My family doesn't have any money. Sure, we'll pick you up. Will, come with me. I have a weird job. Will, thanks for protecting me. So I bring my bodyguard. We go together, and can I tell you, we stop at Heritage's, and I said, go get two huge subs for your family, or hoagies for your family. I said, really? Why? Because you need to eat. And with two huge hoagies, he looks at us and says, this is going to change my family's day. Can I tell you, you've provided that. Because of what you give to Crossbridge, we can freely give to those who need. There are single parents and at-risk pregnancies in our area that you have given to, and you don't even know that. Love Clara, an organization that is very close to this church's home, that was, I mean, you know that we lost a 14-month-old last September, and it destroyed a family. But God has been rebuilding out of the ashes of that family something amazing, and the Love Clara Foundation has come, and they get to touch families who have lost children. Can I tell you, our board here at Crossbridge unanimously, and this is the buffer of where we've given more than we've budgeted, they chose to say, we will be at the forefront of this organization. We will donate $10,000 to them. Why? Because they'll have access to loving families we will never get. And that's what this is about. You see, when you can take two and say, God, I'm going to give you more than two. I'm going to start instead with my first. Forget about all this. I'm going to start with 10. Start there. Could you imagine what Crossbridge would look like if there was such a surplus that when anyone needed, we were like, sure, we love to help. We would love to invest in that. We would love to be with you because we have saved. Because we have no debt. We can give freely. So I want to leave you this morning with the question. What do your percentages look like? How does your Benjamin look? Does it look all focused on you with a tiny sliver for others? Or are you at a place financially where you can say, I want to give freely? It will change your life. Will you pray with me as well, and the music team comes up? God, I thank you. I thank you that you call us to give, and that there are times that when I write a tithe check myself, I stop and wonder, oh man, I could do so much more with this. I could pay that debt. I could save in this way. But you call my family to continue to give and trust you. And that it does, it builds this trust in you that I'm thankful for. And I am so thankful for story after story at this church where we see that you can do far more with our 90% than we can do with 100% on our own. Because you are faithful and everything is yours to begin with anyway. God, I pray that you would allow us as a church to be one that works hard, knows when to quit, that we would avoid debt like the plague. We would save, not for us, but for our grandkids who, God, I dream about them being the greatest givers in a culture that who knows what it looks like, but there will be needs. And that we would be first and foremost great givers in this church. God, at this point, we give back to you, not because we have to, not out of guilt or shame, but out of thanks. Thank you, God. It's in your name we pray. Amen.